Hello.
Welcome to another episode of Unpacking Neuroqueerness. This is George Muniz Gund.
I'm Ksenia.
And today we are going to talk about food and food sensitivities and everything in the food verse that tends to come up for us neurodivergent folk.
Oh, I love the idea of a food verse, like a multiverse.
Yeah, I don't know. This is like the first
But you're
word.
correct about that, though, because there's a lot of things that probably come up because it's such a part of everyone's lives. You have to do it on some
Yeah.
level every day. And I think
Yes.
what we're going to touch on is all the different cultural and social implications of that, some of the labor that has to go into that, also some of the fun. We'll be getting into the food verse.
Yes, we will be getting into the food verse.
We touched on food in the last episode we did together when we were talking about our neurodivergent documentary that we did.
Yeah, exactly.
And you were so excited to talk about food. And the reason that I brought up food as an episode with you is because I think we have more to talk about, which we will.
Yes, exactly.
You're just coming off of beginning in the US of holidays, Thanksgiving for you. You're gonna have Christmas coming up. What do you worry about?
So something that comes up a lot for me is the fact that I know that I won't be able to eat often. I won't be able to eat everything that's on the table because I have sensitivities to a lot of foods, particularly with texture, but also temperature even sometimes. But I think texture can be a big one where I've always experienced this since I was younger, where there are certain foods that I physically can't eat, even if I want to be able to eat it. Someone on my podcast described it to me once as like trying to eat raw chicken. And so I remember having certain kind of foods that I would try to eat and I couldn't. I guess apples are one kind of food for
Really?
me.
So apples.
Apples that I can't eat because of the texture, and also like lettuce, I think because it's a hard, crispy thing, but not always. Sometimes it's, I guess sometimes it's soft, but and it's hard to really narrow down what specific textures are okay and not, but
Your gut
my
understands.
gut understands. It has this, I guess, list of yeses and nos, and then I've been able to slowly synchronize and kind of figure it out with time. And it was a stressful experience because I feel like it was hard for people to not take it personally. They would either think I didn't want to eat their food because I didn't like their food or because I didn't like them. Or it was because they thought, like, okay, they would make a broad assumption based on one food that I didn't like. If I didn't like to eat lettuce, they were all, and this still happens nowadays, where they'll automatically assume that I don't like any vegetables.
Can we take a moment to? So, you don't like lettuce, therefore, you must not like any vegetables.
Exactly. I mean, it happened where, or it
Wow.
wasn't like exactly
Wow.
phrased that way, but there was the lettuce salad being served and I politely declined. And then the comment was, oh, are you one of those people that doesn't eat vegetables? And I remember I just found that odd because, no, lettuce isn't the only vegetable. When I was young, I remember because I would get that comment a lot, or I would get this kind of perception that, oh, I didn't want to eat this because it's healthy or because it's a vegetable. I built a list in my head. I started memorizing. I like broccoli. I like spinach. I like green sprouts. I like asparagus. I like broccoli. No, what was it? Brussels sprouts. That was the fifth one.
You had this as a defense mechanism in case someone went, "You don't like vegetables." You went, "Excuse me.
Yeah, exactly. Like this, tune, this.
I have full list for you."
Yeah. What comes up with Thanksgiving, I think it's more that, oh, because it's a meal that someone, usually it's like someone in the family is volunteering to cook or do at least most of the cooking. Sometimes it's like shared duties. This Thanksgiving, I think there were two or three different people that were involved in the cooking. Each person had one dish.
You make a good point. A lot of the preparation around holidays or shared meals has to do with mutual labor. So it's not even about the food, it's about everything around the food, the prepping, the talk, the small talk, the ask grandma if she wants this. There's a lot of social things implied in huge meals, which is separate from food. But we're talking from the perspective of these huge holiday meals that you've just come from.
I mean, there's like the whole overstimulation of everything that goes around beyond the food or just around it. And then there's also, it feels like almost every year there's gonna be something that I'm not gonna be able to eat. And if it's just my immediate family, it's a lot easier. They know me very well and they know, oh yeah, he doesn't eat this, he doesn't eat that, and they're not offended by it.
They just go, oh, I forgot you don't like that.
And it's totally fine because they might like it and they might want to have it, and that's totally fine and they should have it. There's this mutual understanding of, okay, we don't have to all eat everything that's on the table.
I find the assumption that everyone should eat the same thing very strange. You might not like the same thing.
If we're all eating something that I know I like and I'm going to like every part of it and I'm not going to have an issue, then great. I get worried when, particularly if I'm having Thanksgiving with people that I'm not that close with, even extended family, it's very likely that there's going to be at least something on the table that I'm not going to be able to eat. Kind of just thinking in my head, oh my God, okay, let me have a little speech ready of, oh, I just can't handle this kind of texture. It's nothing personal. And I didn't have to use it. It was great. I think especially in some cultures, but I think even in general, preparing of the food, it feels like it has a very symbolic meaning. I can see how people interpret if you don't eat a specific dish, how you're refusing their gift. You can still appreciate the gift, even if
your gut is telling you no.
No, yes. Here's a non-food example of that. Someone that's an alcoholic receives a gift from someone they know. The gift is presented very passionately. It's wine. The other person hasn't explained, oh, I'm an alcoholic, I can't drink alcohol. I can see this kind of scenario where there's this awkward exchange. Oh, why don't we open it now? Or why don't you have some? And then it becomes a thing. The person that's gifting the wine might feel, oh, they didn't like the wine or they didn't like my gift. But
usually if someone is sober, they'll say, oh, I don't drink anymore, but thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I know people are now sober, or just don't want it. They don't have to necessarily be sober or alcoholics. They just go, no. Thankfully, it's starting to occur where people no longer feel they have to explain that to people.
Yeah.
I think maybe 5 years ago, people would have to have a whole, as you were saying, for your food, whole explanation of don't like mm-hmm. drinking or my parents drink or whatever the fuck, right?
Yeah.
Now I think people are more comfortable in saying, oh, I just don't drink, but that's fine. Mm-hmm. So that analogy that you brought up about, say, that hypothetical alcoholic saying, oh, I don't drink, but thank you for bringing this. We can re-gift it for the food. You can say, oh, this looks wonderful. It's not for me, but I know someone else who would absolutely love it.
Yeah.
I'm someone who was taught to give food to other people. I have friends who work in bars. I have friends who work in restaurants. I have friends who work in offices, things like that. I might not know them so well that I can ask them to come to my house so I can cook for them. But if I'm passing by and I've made a huge batch of things, it's a very non-creepy way of showing that you appreciate they're there.
Yeah, I can see that. I feel like that comes up a lot with Thanksgiving, and I can feel it.
Because everyone has to eat.
And that's part of why I feel so guilty, or I feel so awkward about having to refuse certain dishes, is because I know that the intention, it's a really pure, loving intention behind it. But it's happened before where I would try, I mean, thankfully I only tried this once or twice, but where I would try to eat something against my will, and I would end up gagging. The texture, whatever it is, I don't even know how it happens, or I wish I kind of knew more of the science behind it.
I think there's a part of what people colloquially call lizard brain in your head. Mm. It's very similar to when you smell something and you're like, no.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, there's certain things that you see or you smell or you can see the texture of and understand without trying it.
Yeah. I guess in my case, I could see the dish at a distance if I put it in my mouth.
Or even imagine it.
Or imagine it in my mouth. I mean, people usually won't be able to tell this unless I were to actually put it in my mouth. But I do get that thought. There's no way. Because sometimes, especially if it's a dish that someone made that's been in their family for a long time, you want to be able to try it, but you know you can't. I just know that I can't.
For you, is it not even the texture but also the expectation, the sense of needing to let that person know you appreciate them.
I think it's that on top of it.
Do you think it exacerbates the whole reaction, or is that separate for you?
I think it's separate, but I mean, I think it would be there regardless if there weren't the pressure to eat it because of the person that made it or the story or whatnot. I think that I still wouldn't feel like I can eat it. It does exacerbate that. I mean, it just makes me feel worse. I don't know.
I guess if you're anxious already and your body's preparing to socially freak out, or you feel uncomfortable, the likelihood you're going to be able to eat something and actually digest it is less.
I mean, if it's something that I would already be... I mean, I don't know, it's just, I feel like it's a debate, because it's a lot easier to refuse something if it's maybe something that someone just picked up at the store and just put there. There's not
love baked into it
or anything like that. But if there is, it feels like it just... That's when I get anxious, because then I feel there's this whole intention behind it, and now it's harder for me to say no, and it's harder for me to stay true to what my body is telling me. And I think this would actually happen to me 5 or 10 years ago, where I would end up putting whatever that was on my plate, end up not eating it, but I would have it on my plate just to show that I served it. But then I realized that it was silly, that I don't want to waste food anyway, so I shouldn't have to.
It's a performance. Why are we performing food on plate?
Exactly. And it's just not, it's like, for waste purposes, it's not good anyways. And that's why, even if some people might perceive it as annoying or unnecessary, if there's no photos or not sure exactly what's going to be on the plate. For example, at sushi restaurants, there are some restaurants, and I didn't really see this much in Japan, so I don't know if it's, I don't think it's traditional, but at least here in the US, there are a lot of restaurants that put cucumber in the sushi. Cucumber is something that I'm definitely very averse to. Yeah.
For the record, I love both apples and cucumber, but it's fine.
Okay. I mean, that's fine. That's fine. You can... Yeah.
I will now know never to make you anything with apples or cucumber, and that is fine.
Okay.
If I made you something before this conversation where I did not know that you didn't like apples or cucumbers, I wouldn't have been offended.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that.
More people who bring food need to understand that.
I agree. I certainly agree with that.
Should ask people. I usually ask people before I make them something.
I see. Yeah, that is on behalf of people that has food sensitivities. That is something I really appreciate. I always love it when people ask me, oh, is there anything you can't eat? Is there anything that I should avoid? Is there anything that you prefer?
So, one, allergies. I don't want to kill you. Mm-hmm. Second, is there anything you just don't really like?
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to hate it. I don't want to make it a problem. But also, someone who gives food, there's nothing worse. And I've had this happen twice, where you make something for someone, and you can tell they do not want to eat it.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Both times I went, I'm so sorry, I should have asked you first. It's a terrible feeling for the person.
There is also, I think, with the hyper-empathy, I don't want them to have that feeling either. I already project them having that feeling in my head, and I'm feeling bad because I don't want them to feel bad that I can't eat what they brought, but at the same time, I can't force myself to eat it.
I think as someone who brings food for other people a lot, also, I get hyper-empathy quite a bit as someone with ADHD. It is painful, but also, if I, as a person, am bringing you food, I've put in the effort, and I want you to enjoy it, I'm going to ask you.
If you enjoyed it.
If you enjoyed it, or whether you want whatever's in it.
Okay.
I have to know you well enough. Point about restaurants is something I find interesting. I didn't know what certain foods looked like in different countries, because we used to go to different places all the time. I just wanted to know what foods would look like. So I would spend, as a teenager, lots and lots of time looking up menus online.
Yes, I would do that. Before I go to a restaurant that I don't know, I will tend to look up the menu, because then I'll have an idea of what they're serving and what can I eat.
We're going to a restaurant. We're already going to be around people. So it's filtering out information. It's looking at the menu, making sure that if, say, I'm the one who's choosing, making sure everyone else had something they wanted to eat, and also knowing that I have to be present in a conversation, make sure everyone's fine, and that the prices are okay, there's enough variety. Yeah. There's a certain amount of research that has to be done in order to invite people or go out with someone that you care about and know that you don't have to worry about these things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of research. That's definitely a big reason that I get overwhelmed. I have to plan something, especially if it's more than, gosh, I get very overwhelmed if it's more than one person. Because even one person, I don't know exactly what they like. I don't know what their budget is. Like you said, there's just a lot of different factors to consider. And I always want to get it right. I don't need to get it right the first time.
Yeah. Also, they are an adult, which mm-hmm. I'm assuming they are. Yeah. I mean, it's one thing if you're taking your smaller niece, nephew, or cousin. They're probably just going to want peanut butter jelly sandwiches. That's not your problem.
Right? That makes it easy, but yeah.
It's not on you to make it perfect.
Mm-hmm. I guess this is kind of circling back on how to politely decline. But there's one phrase that one of my therapists used when I was talking to them about this problem I have with, like, how do I politely decline a certain kind of food? And they said that they usually say, oh, I'm not much of a friend of the cucumber, or I'm not much of a friend of this or that. And it was a Brazilian expression. Ah, eu não sou muito amigo do, and then insert whatever the food was. It's a clever way. That's what I had been struggling with at the time. How do I say no in a nice way that's sort of, I don't know, sort of slightly comedic? I don't know how to describe it.
I'm going to bring an Oscar Wilde vibe to the way that, you know, I have things that will help everyone listening.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my life has been surrounded by phrases like, oh, you're going to eat that much cake, or why aren't you eating that, or you should try this. A lot of that time was me learning how to set boundaries, especially around food. Mm-hmm. And people talking to me about food, because even if you don't have a technical eating disorder, even if you just have eating, you know, difficulties, or you don't like certain things, you have the right to go, you don't get to talk to me about it that way.
Mm.
Or you don't get to talk about my food. Mm-hmm. You focus on your food. I'm not saying say that to those people, because they're probably not ready for it. Yeah. But in terms of what you're putting in your body is your choice.
Yeah.
There are different ways that people can express concern if you're not eating enough, and that's probably not saying, oh, you're not eating enough. It's usually not about the food, it's about something else in that case, right? So you ask the person how they're feeling or whether they can help with anything. Don't talk about the food. What people decide to put in their bodies is none of your business.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Even if you don't have an eating disorder, if you don't like something mm-hmm. or you're not feeling well, and someone goes, oh, you're not feeling well, are you? How is that a helpful phrase?
Yeah, it's... Yeah,
it makes you feel helpful. Perceived.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That makes it worse for me. For example, the situation where I was offered a lettuce thing and then comment about, oh, so are you one of those people that doesn't like vegetables? That just makes me feel worse. Oh my God. You know?
We all have people like that in our lives, yeah. Right? And mm-hmm. it's about learning which people do we tell off.
Mm-hmm.
I'll also write these in the description notes. We'll put a list of things you can say.
Yeah.
So who you can say, hey, that's not helpful, or I do like vegetables, or even in your case, go, I have this list of things I like, thank you yeah. very much.
Yeah.
And with some people, you just have to let it go, because mm-hmm. it's about the intention of what they're saying. They mm-hmm. think they're doing it for you, and they're not being honest with themselves.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's why things like food, which are so communal, become such a hot mess.
Mm-hmm.
These kinds of social interactions, because everyone has their own relationship to it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of economic reasons, cultural reasons, and all sorts of capitalist reasons that everyone has different relationships to food, depending on gender, where you're from, etc. It is very complicated, even though it's a very simple thing. You have to feed yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is simple but complicated.
Sure. Because everyone has to do it, so everyone has their own thing about it.
Yeah.
And how they've been taught to talk about it, or think about it, or what they think is okay to eat and what is not okay to eat, or what everyone should be doing with food and not be doing. There's so many rules.
True. There's a lot of rules.
About sustaining your flesh sack.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Food can be art. That's fine. There's mm-hmm. beautiful ways to do food. There's very good food. But when we get down to it, it's about what sustains you and what is something that makes you feel good.
Yeah.
So when people go, oh, that's too much cake, or, oh, you don't like vegetables at all, that's not about you. That's about their relationship with food. Mm-hmm. And that's when you have to go, oh, this is not about me.
Okay, that's the part that's hard sometimes still.
It is hard, but if someone had the intention of being concerned about you, say someone does have an eating disorder, right? You don't come up to them and go, "Oh, you're not eating enough," or "You're eating too much."
Or you're not eating this or
How is this helpful information to this person who knows
Yeah,
this
it's
already?
completely just not helpful. Not only not helpful, but in that case, for instance, I felt weird about it.
Someone who might be binge eating or not eating enough or doing whatever else it is with, say, if they have a disordered thing with eating. Calling them out in front of other people is not helpful. It creates a sense of anxiety around food, sharing food. Also shows that people only care performatively what you do. So, when someone makes a point about the food, we've made the distinction of, is this person receptive to getting, is this someone you feel safe with, is the first question. Do you feel like you can, if it's family that doesn't want to talk about it, take them aside very briefly and go, "Listen, I don't really want you talking to me about it. I understand what you're trying to do, but I don't find it helpful." Because a lot of people, as soon as they hear that, they go, "Oh, of course, understood." And that's who we want to surround
Or
ourselves with.
yes.
But many people are not like this. So what you can do is say, "Thank you. What are you going to eat?" You deflect, or you ask them a question about their food.
Okay,
Or you say, "Noted." And if you don't have to sit next to them, you say, like, "Bon appetit," or whatever form of it, like, "Have a good meal. Thank you so much for your input. Goodbye." You're
I
not trying
see.
to engage with them.
Yeah.
They just want to be acknowledged. There's better ways of doing it. They just want some interaction. So the best thing you can do is just separate yourself from them. It's not about you. It's about them. So unless they're saying something really nasty and you go, "Actually, this is really, really wrong. Don't do this," then you can say things like, "Please focus on your own plate."
I see. It's just hard because I could see myself, if I were to say that, my neighbor, for example, I could see it just getting awkward.
You can say, "Oh, thank you. This is all I feel like eating today, but this looks nice."
That would probably be, that would go better.
Or say, "Oh, what do you eat?" And then she gets distracted by the thing she's talking about.
That's clever.
It's about acknowledging their point of view. You don't have to say, "Okay, that was a good point." Because that's the thing that frustrates me most. I used to feel like I had to say, "Oh, that's a good point." It's not a good point. It's a terrible point. You shouldn't have made the point at all. Why are you talking about my food at
That's kind
all?
of what happened to me last year, and I regretted it. My reaction was I'm just sensitive with these things. I can't even remember what I said, but it was basically I felt like I had to sort of agree with her.
Did you feel like that was a bit of a betrayal to
Of my to
yourself?
myself, absolutely.
If someone says, "Oh, you don't like all vegetables?" If you feel like you have to do the list, you don't have to do the list. They're not owed the list.
Yeah, they're not old the list, it's true.
You can go, "Actually, I do like some vegetables, I just don't like this one." And then if they're curious, they'll be like, "Oh, so what is that about?" And that'll tell you, "Oh, they're actually interested."
I like the deflection thing. I think I'm gonna try that because I'm already, of course, thinking about, oh, how's it gonna be tomorrow night? Because what if there's something that I can't eat? And I like that deflection thing. I think I will try that. What are you gonna eat?
What do you like about this food? Because I don't like it, but when was the first time you tried this food? I want to hear your
I
story about
like
it.
that. When was the first time you tried this food? Yes.
Why do you like it? Is there a story? Did someone make it for you? Did your grandmother
Exactly.
make it for you? Because that's why people have such visceral experiences with food, because it's so tied to what they grew up with and the smells and the sensations and their grandmothers, their grandfathers. Again, so complicated yet so simple.
Okay, exactly. That this is reminding me of Thanksgiving. Because the thing that I couldn't eat at Thanksgiving this year was an apple thing. And thankfully no one noticed that I didn't eat any, and actually my half sister ate a ton. So
Taking one for
yeah,
the team.
exactly. 'Cause Scott was talking about it and he said that it was something that his mother used to make. And that's the hard part. Darn it. Sometimes I wish that I could eat these things because I know they're very powerful to people, but then again, I'm getting to the point where I feel I'm more comfortable just politely declining things and that I can do things in a way that it makes it clear that it's not personal.
Yeah, and I'm glad that it's not necessarily deflection, but it's curiosity about why the other person likes the thing. Because what you were just talking about, that story about Scott, it's again going back to what we were talking about much earlier. It's an intimate thing. There's a certain amount of boundary that's moved because we're taking something that has meaning from someone else or someone else's childhood or someone else's history. You're putting it in your actual mouth. You're taking someone's story, their sense of love, and all of these things, and you're trusting them enough to not to cook things properly, to present it in a certain way. It's kind of like you're eating a bit of them because they've eaten it, so therefore it's kind of like you are what you eat. You're it's such a communal experience. It's so weird. It's one of the lovely things about food is you can share something so visceral, but then if you don't understand, or the other person doesn't understand, that, hey, me not eating your food doesn't mean I hate you.
Or your mother, or the history of the food, or any of that.
You can say, I appreciate the story. I love the story. I would love to eat the story. I just can't eat.
I would love to eat the story. I just can't eat this. That's one of my new favorites. Yes.
We'll put that in the
We'll
description
put that
notes
in the
because
description.
sometimes you love you can't do this.
Yeah, exactly. Love you can't do this. It's
Yeah, it's like it also the best thing to say after that usually is, by the way, if there's anything that's similar, let me know. I have no
Yeah,
problems with that. So
exactly. It's
that way they feel
perfect.
it's a two-way street.
Yeah.
One of the other things we touched on was people bringing food from other places.
Yes, that's the next thing I wanted to talk about.
In preparation for this episode, I asked my partner, who was also on the spectrum, about what he thought we should include in this episode. And his eyes lit up and he went, people bringing food from their homes.
Yes, that is something that I relate to a lot, and it's come up a few times, even in the support groups that I'm in.
I find this fascinating because I have the absolute opposite reaction. So to hear you and him talking about it is really interesting. So what do they talk about in the support groups?
What's come up is mainly in a potluck type situation, but I think particularly it's something for people's work or the office or people that you don't know very well. Because I think there's a difference. If it's family, you know them, you know their habits, you know how they cook things. But if it's someone that you don't know very well, like an office potluck or something.
My partner has a monthly, I think, thing where he'll bring stuff, and usually he eats it and he's like, it's fine, but he gets a bit of this anxiety about going in.
Yeah, I get that anxiety. I will end up eating it unless it's something that I'm sensitive to. I do get this anxiety because if I don't know the person that made it, I just don't know anything about them. And maybe there could be a little bit of paranoia in there as well, but I feel like it makes sense to me because if you don't know the person, you don't know their habits. You don't know if they wash their hands when they cook. You don't know if something else got in. You don't know how it was prepared. You don't know if the person left to go to the bathroom and something fell on it or something happened or it sat out for too long. You don't know how long was this meat on the verge of expiration? Was it properly refrigerated?
For you, it's a sanitary issue.
Yes, I think it, I mean, it's part of it. There is also the part of yeah, it feels very intimate. You mentioned that your partner said something along these lines that with someone that you don't know, someone from the office that you might have talked to once or twice, to eat something that they made, there is that whole intimacy thing. And it to me, I guess, maybe to him as well, to others, it feels a bit overwhelming because it's like you're having this intimacy. I don't know, I'm trying to figure out an example because it's not sexual.
Food is so close, it's one of those basic things. You're touching on it quite well. It's a primal need to eat. And so the cooking of it, and again, this is, again, the story. I love the story. I can't eat this. It's about the person taking the time to do it, which is why I love to do it. I was taught by my Russian grandmother that giving people food is the least creepy way of showing love in terms of if you don't know them well, right? So that's my perspective. I completely understand yours, whereas you go, I don't know you well enough. Whereas I was taught, I don't know you well enough. I like you. I can't give you gifts because that's creepy.
I
But
see.
I can give you food
I
because you
see.
need to eat at some point. But both, they're valid. If you took time out of your day to do this, you transported it somehow.
We don't know how. And that's the, I guess that's where the sanitary thing comes in. And I've heard other people talking about this too, about just all the different layers or the different steps that you don't know. You don't know how long it was refrigerated, where it was bought, how long it sat out, was it properly washed. I can just see in my head, there's this whole chain. I mean, because I know you well, I would completely trust you if you were cooking.
Also ask you what you wanted.
Yes.
And probably explain to you how I was bringing it to you, because you would appreciate that.
I would very much appreciate that.
Do you cook very much?
Not very much for that very reason. I get overwhelmed by the steps. I have to slice this and then put this and then heat this up. And then I just remember all the times I tried. I used to have it even relatively easy because I used the service once where they would send you ingredients. And you would put them together.
These meal things that are measured out, so you don't have to worry about.
Yeah. But then even so, some of them, there's still a lot of prep that's required. You still have to cook the chicken or do this or cook this or do that. It is true that it's helpful. It's better than just having to do everything from scratch from the market, because then you don't know the portions or everything. But what I noticed is that even if it was portioned out and everything, if there are three or four steps that you have to do, I get overwhelmed because I start focusing on one step and then doing this, and then, oh, but I have to check if that's not getting too hot, and I have to wash this, and I have to check that. I just remember catching myself overwhelmed by that. And then to this point now, I usually, like, pre-prepared, which...
Like healthy pre-prepared foods you can put in the oven.
Yeah, or the microwave, or, yeah, ideally the oven.
I'm someone who actually really enjoy this cooking when I have the time. On the point of knowing how things work, and I'm someone who has difficulty with time management, I find that listening to certain compositions of classical music that I know really well, that I used to dance to when I was a ballet dancer, so I know the timing. So I'm kind of dancing and doing things that I don't even notice, but it's practice for me. Not everyone can do it.
Yeah.
But I've turned it into something I enjoy. So while I'm waiting for this, and you have to do it over and over and over again, I don't do things exactly, which bothers my partner to no end. Like, he loves what I make, but I don't measure things out very much, unless it's baking. That's a chemistry thing. You have to measure shit when you bake. The kinds of cooking, it's me going like, oh, we have these things in the fridge. I'm going to make something out of them. I remember the first time I did that in front of my partner, he was like, how did you see the mess and make a thing? I'm like, oh, yeah. I just sort of rinsed this and did that, and I did my fucking ADHD thing. And he was like, why? But not everyone can do that. So sometimes it's about meal prep, and it's about cooking a certain amount of protein, chicken or whatever, that'll last you 3 days, making a certain grain or having breads and making rice, and then having vegetables, and just mixing and matching in very numerous ways that only take 10 minutes after you've just done that 1 hour or hour and a half of something on Sunday. You can either have salads, or you can, if you have bread in the house, you make a sandwich instead of having rice in there, or you put an egg in the rice. You know, there's a lot of things you can do with very simple things.
True.
The dilemma is starting from scratch every time.
Yeah.
Just spend an hour going, what do I need to use in the fridge?
Yeah.
How could I eat this? You put on something you like, or a podcast, or even listen to us. That might be helpful
for anyone. Yes, listen to us. Listening. Yeah.
We'll happily be your soundtrack. Combine it with something you like listening to, or want to listen to, or want to even watch in the background. Because that way it just makes it better, and that way you're not even noticing after a certain point. Just make sure you're safe. Don't cut your finger. But if you couple certain tasks that you don't like chopping or cooking or whatever, and you want to take that hour every week to prep so that you have those tomatoes in the fridge, but you're feeling tired. You're like, I don't really want to cut them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really want to chop those peppers.
Yeah, the executive functioning is another thing with cooking.
So it's a present to future self. Cut certain things, make sure that you use them certain times, and make sure you have eggs or bread or gluten-free options or noodles or rice just ready for you to put them in a pan already half-cooked and just whatever.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, having things ready,
Also, you have your safe foods.
Yes, safe foods are very important.
Don't let anyone shame you about your safe foods. They feed you.
Yes.
That is all they need to do. They are feeding you. Mine is peanut butter.
I used to really like peanut butter. Now, unfortunately, I can tolerate it in small amounts. My safe food, I would say, probably pasta with some kind of, either plain sometimes, but usually with some kind of meat sauce. Rice and chicken, even teriyaki chicken.
Brussels sprouts to that.
Brussels sprouts, yes. I like Brussels sprouts too. Yeah, broccoli or Brussels sprouts.
Brussels sprouts particularly. If you like them, a lot of people think it takes a lot of time to cook. It does not. If you don't want oil on them, you can do something called steaming, which is where you take the pot, you put boiling water underneath, and you take a colander.
Yeah.
Make sure it's all clean, and you just leave it there for 15 minutes. That way they're not boiled, they're not drenched, or the hot water cooks them.
Yeah.
That way you can always reuse them, and they're not cooked in oil and stuff.
I see. Okay, clever. That's a good way of making sure they're softer too, right?
There's boiling and there's steaming. So boiling is when you put things in hot water directly.
Yeah, okay.
Certain vegetables, if I'm going to reuse them, or as I was mentioning before, recook them in certain ways. I don't want them to be super, super cooked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see.
The steaming allows it to be cooked and soft and crisp.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if I want to put it on a pan and mix it with other things the next day, it's not going to be mush.
Yeah, okay. That's important, because for me, it can't be too mush. But it can't be too hard either. There's a right consistency. I've had Brussels sprouts that were too hard, and then I've had Brussels sprouts that were good consistency, and then I've had Brussels sprouts that were too much.
In the US, you get them pre-peeled or in a bag.
Yeah.
Ideally, if you have the time and you like cooking, you'd create little tiny crosses on the top of them so that no matter how you're cooking, the water can get inside or the steam can get inside the actual Brussels sprout. But it's a lot of effort if you don't like cooking to create tiny little crosses on the top of all of your sprouts. I don't mind doing it. If you are, again, someone who likes cooking, it's fine. It's easier in terms of physics for heat to circulate.
Nice. Interesting. Good to know.
Yeah. It's learning what works for you. If you need to cut carrot sticks once a week and just have them in a bowl so that you eat vegetables, there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's important to remind everyone that if it's a safe food for you, like what you eat, how you eat it. I wish there were more understanding of that in general, because I have been one to get comments from people here and there. Oh, you're not eating enough of this or enough of that. And it's...
What are they doing? Watching you with a microscope all day? Really? You're that interested?
Yeah, I do happen to have an aversion to I like tomato sauce, but for some reason, I have an aversion to tomatoes. And so that was a thing that my dad's wife noticed when they started dating. I remember she had this thing that I needed to eat more tomatoes. And I remember, I think I mentioned one time, oh yeah, like I don't really like tomatoes. And then there was one time she was like, oh yeah, I want to talk about that with you.
You and your tomato aversion, we need to have an intervention.
No, we and we and thankfully we never talked about it, and I think she sort of understands a little better my food stuff now.
Your tomato aversion has affected me in the following ways. One.
Yeah, like it felt so weird when she said that. I'm like, we need to talk about that. What do you mean?
We need to have a family meeting about you and the tomatoes.
Like what?
If it makes you feel any better, the tomatoes thing. I found out a few months ago, and this is one of my closest friends of now, almost probably 10 years now. I made her things with tomatoes when we first were getting to know each other, and she ate them, it was fine. Mm-hmm. I only recently learned that she doesn't like raw tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you didn't tell me. And she was like, it was fine. I'm like, no, it's not. Yeah. Our entire relationship has been a lie. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been. It's fine. But I was being dramatic.
I think for me, it has to crush in sauce. Because I think even the seeds, the skin or the seeds would...
It's like cucumber for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little better because I have eaten it before. I can eat it. I think it was pasta, for example. If there were cucumber, or any dish, really. If there were cucumber in it, I'm like, no, I can't eat it. But I have had pasta where the tomato is just sort of crushed, but it's not really sauce. I can technically eat it, but I would certainly prefer if it's sauce.
Understood. My friend and a few other people I know, probably some of our listeners, they only like cooked tomatoes. And I looked into it. It's because of there's a certain pH in the tomato that shifts when you cook it. Mm-hmm. So they don't like the acidity, not even the texture, but the acidity of the tomato if it's not cooked.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Even if it's not a neurodivergent thing, there's certain things that people's brains, again, like you and the cucumber, they're just going,
yeah, thank you. Exactly. Mm-hmm. The feeling of...
when you can't eat something, or just you just know that something about food makes you anxious, especially when you're younger, right? Or you're undiagnosed, or you are diagnosed, yeah, but you don't understand that food is a part of whatever's going on.
Yeah.
It's just one of those peripheral things, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think for me, I knew there was something with food. I started to realize that I had sensitivities or aversions to certain foods. But I never really understood why. I never made a link with neurodivergence or anything, partly because I didn't discover that I was neurodivergent or that I was autistic particularly until... I knew I had some differences, but that's all. Like, I didn't discover that I was autistic until I was 16. The food stuff, I guess, sadly, because everyone else just interpreted it as me being picky with certain foods, I just assumed that was it and rolled along with it. I guess it was just always something that I ended up chalking, because it's how everyone else chalked it off as like, oh, I'm just picky with this or that. I ended up chalking it off as that, but I remember it never felt... accurate. It always felt like, no, there's a reason. There's something behind this. And I remember feeling annoyed from an early age when people would say stuff like, oh, you don't like vegetables, because I didn't want to eat lettuce.
That's the list.
Yes, that's the list. Exactly. Because I got so annoyed with it that I built that list in my head. I was, as a defense mechanism, I'm like, okay, I do like broccoli. I do like spinach. I do like bean sprouts, I do like asparagus, and I do like Brussels sprouts, thank you very much. So, it was a total defense mechanism. And then I realized later on, it wasn't even when I got diagnosed as autistic, and I wish that had been presented to me, the information packet or whatnot. I wish I had been given more information about, oh, this is something you might experience as an autistic person in terms of sensitivities, in terms of food. And I understand there was probably a lot less research about it 9 years ago.
It's not just light. It's not just sound. It's not just texture. It's also the things you put in your mouth every day.
Exactly. And then I figured it out probably 2 or 3 years ago. And that was thanks to connecting with other neurodivergent people online, or even before I started connecting with them, it was really from following people, starting to follow people that talked exclusively about their neurodivergent experiences. And then first it was the obvious stuff. I'm sensitive to lights. I'm sensitive to sound. I'm like, of course, that sensory stuff is related to the autism, I started to realize. But then food was huge. When that came up and people started talking about their sensitivity to textures, to food, I was like, oh my goodness. So that's what it is. So that's what it was. My whole childhood and teenagehood, and then even into early adulthood, these things that I couldn't, that I still feel like sometimes I can't explain to people, there's that missing piece. There's the connection. That's why it was so powerful to finally figure out that link. Now I can say that, and it's just an easier, more direct way of shutting someone down when they're saying something like, oh, you don't like vegetables or whatever. I mean, I still don't feel confident enough to always use it, because I don't want to come across as aggressive either, but I know that I don't have to have a list anymore. I don't have to freaking memorize. I don't owe anyone a list. I could just say I'm autistic, or if they don't know and I'm not comfortable sharing.
It's not even about you being autistic, it's about you saying, I just don't like this vegetable.
Yeah, exactly. Even if it will be times where it's someone that I don't know and I don't want to tell them I'm autistic, but I can still say, I don't like the texture of this. I have texture sensitivity or whatever it is. Sometimes it doesn't always mean that the situation is going to be avoided, because coincidentally with the one person that made the comment about, oh, so you don't like vegetables, I had told them before that I had food sensitivity. I was already preparing myself for the possibility of there being something that I can't eat.
And the point of that being, you shouldn't have to do that.
I shouldn't have to do that. It's true.
There's nothing wrong with you doing it, other than the fact that it causes you stress. We're not shaming you for this. It's very thoughtful of you. We can be using that energy and thought for other things.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I really love the deflection thing that you mentioned. I'm going to start using that. If I get something like that again, like, oh, you don't like vegetables, I'm like, what do you eat? What do you like? Oh, what's your story with this food? I just think that's such a great way of doing it.
Often what I'll do, just to an addendum to that, I'll answer, that, oh, I don't like this, but there's certain things I like. Do you have any vegetables that you, why do you like this one?
Yeah, what's the story?
Eggplant is, I've got to say, for anyone listening who has food sensitivities and you want to start a conversation, I found this out accidentally because I don't really mind any of this. I think because it is rubbery if you don't cook it. It is a universal ick or no litmus test for everyone.
Yeah.
So there's people who really, really, really hate it because they've either never had it properly cooked or they just don't like it. But it's something that even for, this is something that neurodivergent people can ask neurotypical people if they're ever asked about vegetables, because everyone has opinions about eggplant. Absolutely everybody.
Yeah, I've heard that one and cilantro as well.
There's a gene that makes it taste like soap for some people.
I have that gene.
Yeah. Again, that's not something you can change. DNA goes, my tongue tastes this and it tastes like soap.
Yeah, pretty much. There's the soap thing, and for me there's also tickle with the texture. I feel like it gets to the top of my mouth or to my throat or something. It's sort of, there's a tickle.
The appropriate response to this information is, I will demonstrate it now, good to know, I will not make you anything with cilantro.
Thank you.
See how easy that was, everybody?
Yeah, no, it can be very easy, yes. I'm really glad that you are a person that doesn't take these things personally and that is just...
Yes, because I want to watch you suffer whilst eating the thing that I made you. Mm-hmm. That makes me... this is sarcasm, everyone. It does not make me happy. Yeah. I can tell when you don't like my food. It makes no one happy.
It doesn't make me happy when I don't like people's food, but yeah.
Why are we doing this to everyone?
Why are we doing this to everybody? Yeah.
I'm glad you and I will not do this to each other.
Yes, we will not.
Everyone listening will keep in mind that you don't have to suffer.
Yeah.
Because someone else feels that you need to push something down your mouth.
Yeah.
Let's say no to that during the holiday season.
Yes. Say no to that.
Sure. Sustain yourself in a way that makes you happy.
Yeah.
Not in a way that makes other people feel better.
Yes, please. Please. And that goes back to the whole narrative, one of the main points we make in the whole podcast. Do what feels good to you, what you need, not what's going to make other people feel better.
Or what other people tell you will make them feel good.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, everyone, for listening.